On June 29, 1905, Archibald Wright, Moonlight Graham, a Carolina grad and older brother of President Frank Porter Graham, appeared as a right fielder in a single inning of a major league game for the New York Giants. Then he became a beloved doctor in Minnesota, and that story was popularized in the movie Field of Dreams. This weekend, WCHL is remembering that game by re-airing a 2009 conversation with Brett Freelander and Bob Reising, authors of Chasing Moonlight, the true story of Field of Dreams, Doc Graham. All that about the book and the Chapel Hill connections to Doc Graham and his brother, Frank Porter Graham.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, one of the great heroes in the Chapel Hill community that we talk about still today is Frank Porter Graham. And if you talk to people all over the country and ask them if they have heard of Moonlight Graham, and then they kind of shake their heads and maybe say no. And then you say, did you ever see Field of Dreams? They said, oh, that Moonlight Graham, that doctor. They remember what was just a short part of that movie, but a very poignant part when a doctor who had been a professional baseball player for one or two innings had the opportunity to go up to bat again and threw away his second opportunity for a major league career to save a young woman. Oh, this makes me want to cry. Well, Moonlight Graham, it turns out, is Frank Porter Graham's brother and played baseball at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill before he entered the professional ranks. It's a story that some of us know in part, and it's a story that thankfully we can know in full thanks to the efforts of my guest today, Brett Freelander and Bob Reising.
Reising.
And Bob Reising, if I stuttered on his name, I shouldn't, because he and I were friends when he was a 30-year professor at the University of North Carolina at Pembroke, or Pembroke State University, as it was for most of the time he was there. And I ran into him when I spent some time there. And his colleague or partner in crime, Brett Freelander, is somebody who sports people in Chapel Hill know pretty well because he covers ACC sports, basketball and football, and so he's part of this community. And these guys got together. They got interested in this, in the legend of Moonlight Graham, and tracked it all down and now told the story in a brand new book called Chasing Moonlight, The True Story of Field of Dreams, Doc Graham. Welcome, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, DG.
Thank you, DG.
Well, you know, why don't we start out just a little bit? Tell us, where do you start? Does somebody just say, tell us a little bit about Doc Graham?
Well, kind of. It's almost how it happened. I love the movie and wore out two VHS copies of it. Yes.
Well, you're not alone.
No,
when I've been getting ready for this, there are all kinds of people say, I got a copy of Field of Dreams at my home. When I get down to the dumps, I watch it, I cry, and I feel better.
Absolutely. You know what else, too? When the Atlanta Braves, my favorite team, needed a win, I would watch it to hope that the magic would kind of wear off on them, too. But anyway, so it's pretty common knowledge that I love that movie. And a friend of mine came in to talk to me in my office at the Fayetteville Observer, where I worked at the time, on a totally unrelated matter. And he said, you know, I know you love the movie Field of Dreams. Did you know that Doc Graham was born here in Fayetteville? And I thought Doc Graham was a fictional character. I had absolutely no idea. And I said, no. And so I ran right out to the main branch library in Fayetteville, got the baseball encyclopedia, sort of like W.P. Kinsella did when he found the name for the novel
this
Shoeless
Joe. This was the author of the book on which the movie was based.
Sure enough, there it was. One line of type in the baseball encyclopedia, one game, no at-bats. Born in Fayetteville, North Carolina, 1879. And so I decided that this would be a good thing to write a story about for the newspaper. Only as a sports writer, I go to games, I talk to the participants, the coaches, and I write what I see.
You're not used to doing all this research.
Right, and even when I do a retrospective story, you talk to the people who are involved, ask them what they remember, how they felt. Well, Doc Graham was dead for 30 years by the time I found out about him, and I really didn't know where to start. And about a month earlier, I had done a story on Dr. Reising, because he had done another book.
His Jim Thorpe books,
and I had done a story on him.
Well, let me just interrupt you, because I'm really sorry and introduce Bob, who is... got a lot of interest, but is known throughout the country as an expert on Jim Thorpe. And that was really important when you were at University of North Carolina at Pembroke because of the combination of athletics and Jim Thorpe as a American Indian hero. So, all this is coming together. Keep going.
So I called
two of the ties that I find fascinating and that I've found fascinating from day one. Thorpe, of course, played in Fayetteville in 1909 and 1910 and lived in Fayetteville in 1910. And secondly, Burt Lancaster
played them both.
Played Jim Thorpe in the 1951 classic, Jim Thorpe All-American, and then in 1989 in Field of Dreams played Moonlight Graham, and they both played right field for the New York Giants.
There you go.
Well, and incredible. And the other thing that I learned from y'all's book, I'm sorry to get off track.
That's okay.
I want to get back to it. The other thing is that the Jim Thorpe, you know, the great tragedy was that he lost his Olympic medals because he played professional baseball.
In North Carolina.
In North Carolina.
Yeah. And so a sad part of it. But we'll come back to the intersection of professional amateur athletics later, y'all. But
Frank Porter Graham was very important in that the whole thing too. But anyway, so I called Bob to say, look, you've researched guys who are long gone. What do I do? Where do I start? And he helped me. We got in touch with some people in Chisholm, Minnesota. We went up to the library here at Chapel Hill to go through a whole bunch of old alumni records and yearbooks and things like that. And we went to Charlotte and did that and came across a pretty nice story. I wrote a nice story for the newspaper. And that morning, and I'm not a morning person, but Dr. Ryson called me at 7 o'clock that next morning and said, nice story, but you left so much stuff out. Have you ever thought about writing a book? And every writer thinks about writing a book. And it's like, wow, it's a great subject. And I thought, yeah, but you know, I just don't have the time to do this. I'm a columnist. I do so much writing. And he said, let's do it together.
That's how it got started. What was going through your mind, Bob Ryson, when you made that call to him? Did you really have in mind that you might write a book, or you just?
I enjoy researching, as Brett said, and the more I looked at Graham, the more fascinating he became. And again, I was fascinated by the fact that Lancaster had played Thorpe and likewise had played Moonlight Graham. And the Fayetteville ties fascinated me always. So anyway, there were a lot of tugs that I found fascinating. I just couldn't – I was working on a book on Thorpe called Jim Thorpe, The Rest of the Story, and I – said, well, I'll just set it aside now, and thanks to Brett, have a little project dealing with Moonlight Graham.
It was a great matchup, wasn't it, in the sense that you've got a newspaper writer who loves to write and knows how to tell a great story and to do it in short order, and then you've got a scholar who loves to do the research.
And an English professor who's a great editor, by the way.
Who can edit that journalistic stuff. Yeah, well, so it worked. It must have been a great partnership. But not all the – I mean, well, golly, we won't talk about your disagreements that you might have had along the way. But
we really didn't have too many, to be honest with you. And I think the sums up of how we worked together. Bob wrote a few chapters. I wrote a few chapters. We did the research kind of piecemeal. Mm. And at the end, the last chapter, the epilogue, so to speak, we sat down together in a conference room in the library. And between us, in 2 days, kind of sat down and just kind of wrote a sentence. Where do we want to go from here? And just kind of wrote it together. So it's been a great partnership. A lot of people say, well, how did you do it? Isn't it hard doing it with two authors? But really, I couldn't have thought about doing it any other way, to be honest with you.
Great result. For those of you joining us late, we're talking about Doc Graham, who is famous around here for two reasons. One is he's a character in the Field of Dreams, a memorable character in the Field of Dreams, played by Burt Lancaster. And the other is that he is Frank Porter Graham's brother and played an important part in Frank Porter Graham's life that we'll talk about later. Talk a little bit about the growing up years for both Frank Graham and for Archie Graham, his brother, who we call Doc or Moonlight Graham.
Well, they came from a very education-oriented family. Their father, Alexander Graham, was the first superintendent of schools in Fayetteville. And then he did such a good job with that school system, Charlotte hired him away to start their public school system. So education was stressed. In fact, all nine kids ended up going to college, which back in that
So these kids were born in the 1870s, 80s,
yeah, right,
and in
right.
Fayetteville or Charlotte.
That is correct. Archie was the second oldest. His brother David, who died in World War I, was the oldest and was a fine athlete. And actually, the father was also an athlete, played baseball, and was a captain of the team at UNC himself. And so it was one of those things where education was stressed, but physical fitness and athletics were also stressed. And actually, Frank Porter Graham also wanted to follow in the footsteps of the two older brothers. And he had gotten an illness when he was younger, and it kind of stunted his growth. He was a sickly child, and he was not the athlete that that the other boys were. But he went on and played on the scrub team here in Chapel Hill and ended up becoming a coach before he obviously ended up getting into educational administration.
So the two Graham brothers, both were successful as baseball players and students at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
And it's almost fair to say that Moonlight Graham was both blessed and cursed by his intellect and his athletic ability, because, of course, he pursued both paths. And he was firmly convinced, and I like to think he was right, that he could be successful in baseball and simultaneously equally successful in medicine.
Well,
but he lived in the wrong era.
We're talking about Moonlight Graham, Doc Graham of The Field of Dreams. We're talking with the authors of a new biography called Chasing Moonlight, The True Story of The Field of Dreams, Doc Graham. We're talking with Brett Freelander and Robert Rising. We'll be right back after this short break.
If you joined us late, we're re-airing a 2009 conversation with Brett Freelander and Bob Rising, authors of Chasing Moonlight, The True Story, A Field of Dreams, Doc Graham. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. We're re-airing a 2009 conversation with Brett Freelander and Bob Rising, authors of Chasing Moonlight, The True Story, A Field of Dreams, Doc Graham, and his one inning of Major League Baseball on June 29th, 1905.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Brett Freelander and Robert Rising, who are the authors of a new biography of a famous Dr. Graham. It's called Chasing Moonlight, The True Story of the Field of Dreams, Doc Graham. And if you thought for a minute that it was about Frank Porter Graham, well, it is a little bit about Frank Porter Graham, because Moonlight Graham was Frank Porter Graham's brother. We know about Frank, we know about Doc Graham because of the movie, but the movie is maybe true in the sense of overall truth, but on the specific facts, it's an error in many cases and doesn't tell us all about the real baseball career of Moonlight Graham, and you guys do.
Exactly.
So tell us about his career.
Oh, there are quite a number of differences between fact and film. For instance, Moonlight Graham was a left-handed hitter. person, Whaley, playing Moonlight as a youngster, swung the bat right-handed. Moonlight Graham was bald and had no mustache. Burt Lancaster, of course, has a full head of hair and a fine mustache. The setting, the time has changed. There are a number of discrepancies. He maintains in the film, or is communicated in the film, that he was born in Chisholm, his special place. And, of course, we sitting around this table know darn well he was born in North Carolina.
The biggest difference is that in the movie he tells Ray Kinsella that he got called up to the Giants on the last day of the season and played that game, knew he was going to get sent down, and he quit baseball to become a doctor because he knew he was going to get sent back down. That's not true. He played in June 1905, played the one game, and actually was with the team another couple of weeks afterwards until John McGraw, who didn't like him for many reasons, decided—
John McGraw was the manager, the manager of the Giants.
He ended up sending him down to the minors and actually told him, as soon as you play yourself back into shape, because he had come after spring training because he had to come after school was over, that they'd bring him back. Well, he lied. He never intended to bring him back. And actually, Graham played four more years of minor league baseball and actually led the New York Penn League in hitting in 1906.
This was after his one or two inning appearance for the New York Giants that was dramatized in the film. He really did that.
Yes.
But he didn't quit baseball.
No, he did not.
He kept on playing, and he was a pretty successful minor league player.
He played through 1908.
Yeah, actually 1909. And he had dreams. He had visions of coming back. They played his minor league team, the Scranton Miners, played the New York Giants in an exhibition game in 1906, the year after he played his one game. And he thought that if he had a good game, that McGraw would put him back on the train and take him with him back to New York. Well, he had a very good game and challenged the guy who he replaced in right field for his one game, George Brown, to a race after the game because they were both very quick. And members of both teams, the spectators, passed around a hat and had collected about $500 for the winner. And Brown chickened out at the end, got back on the train and left, and that was the last Graham ever saw of the New York Giants. But he continued to play for several years, hoping that he could possibly get another shot.
McGraw, again, an interesting comparison, didn't like Thorpe either. McGraw was at odds with Thorpe most of the time, calling him a dumb Indian.
Yeah, one of the things
opening in his mail, for instance.
You're kidding. Oh,
so,
wow.
But he had different reasons for disliking Moonlight. He felt that Moonlight didn't have a commitment to baseball because he was into medicine simultaneously, and a real professional baseball player, according to McGraw, would give full-time attention to baseball.
And the other thing, too, is he came from the Northeast. His father fought for the Union Army in the Civil War, and Alexander Graham fought for the Confederacy, and he was actually taken prisoner at the Battle of Bentonville. And a street urchin like McGraw had nothing to do with a college boy like Graham. And so, poor Graham had three strikes against him right from the start.
Well, I will have to say now that I know that Bob Reising had previous experience with McGraw, it explains this little feeling that I had that maybe the authors didn't really like McGraw too much. The authors of this book didn't
like
McGraw too much.
Well, McGraw was not a likable man. If you read George Will in that great baseball book, Men at Work, which came out, I think, around 1990. Anyway, George Will, who used his language beautifully, says, in effect, McGraw was a street fighter. He was a thug.
I thought you were going with somewhere else. We're on the air here, so.
He was a liar. He was, I think he, it might be said that he never hit above the belt.
It's interesting. One of the qualities of the Graham family, we think, in large part because of Frank Porter Graham, was that they had very strong feelings, but they were able to get along with people pretty well.
Yeah.
And it was just tough for Doc Graham to get along with his manager. And the other thing was, that, as y'all point out, the Giants were a great team at that point.
Yes, they had a good club.
And that's the thing, too. Graham probably could have signed with either the Phillies or the Dodgers as well, both of whom were really bad teams. But he was always a guy who was taught to strive for the highest, strive for the best. And he wanted to play for the best. And when the Giants showed some interest in him, he signed with them, even though he knew full well that it would have been a lot tougher to crack their lineup than it would have been in Philadelphia or Brooklyn.
Can we go back just a little bit in terms of Doc Graham's professional baseball career? Because we've talked about his major league career, and then you'd have to say is a pretty successful minor league career that followed his major league career. But we didn't talk about where he first played professional baseball. Can we do that? We all tell
us. Yeah.
Charlotte was the place. Brett has all the stats on that. At his fingertips. Tell him about Charlotte.
Well, Doc Graham never really intended on being a professional baseball player because, like his father, he was on that career track where he'd play in college and then he'd go on to medical school and become a doctor. But his manager here, the coach at Carolina, was a guy by the name of Ed Ashenbach. And he had gotten a job that summer in 1902 managing the Charlotte Hornets of the Carolina League. And, of course, he wanted to put together the best team he could, so he had Graham come to play center field for him and bat leadoff. That team was so good, it won 25 games in a row at
now,
one
this
point.
Is, just to make the point, this is a college player
Yes.
who in the summertime plays professional.
That's correct. And oh, by the way, came back the next year and played college baseball again, and then went on to play two more years of college baseball at Maryland, where he was in medical school. So he mentions that in the book. He said that, you know, nowadays you can't take a lifesaver without getting into trouble. He said back then there were no rules and nobody knew how to, you know, to check these things. And so he played 5 years of varsity baseball at two different colleges, all the while playing professional baseball in the summer.
It puts a little bit of helps us to understand the dilemma that Jim Thorpe had as the rules with respect to professionalism and how it worked were there, but they were not as tightly enforced as they were just a few years later, I guess. And
exactly.
That was Thorpe's trouble. Moonlight never. I guess Carolina never had to forfeit any baseball. Maybe it's not too late.
Well, I don't know. Is there a statute of limitations?
Yeah, I don't know.
And I don't think we want to convey the impression that Thorpe's personality was similar to Moonlight's. Moonlight's, of course, included a great intellect. Thorpe was no intellect, but he was very calm and very composed, a quiet person. But one thing he would not tolerate is indignities. Now, Moonlight, I think, was willing to keep his mouth shut, as it were, around McGraw, regardless of what happened. He never had any spats with McGraw.
And I think he also, I don't think he really disliked McGraw. I think that he looked at him as somebody who's been in baseball, knew what he was doing, and was basically waiting his turn, figuring that he was going to be a fair man, he was going to give him a shot. And then when he told him, look, you came here late, you're not in playing shape, why don't we send you down to the minors and get you in the shape? And when you come back, he honestly believed he was coming back. And he, I think, was actually happy to go to Scranton because he was going to get to play, and he thought he was doing it for a good purpose.
Well, the thing that you point out about Graham that was phenomenal to me, other than the fact that he played professional, amateur, and went back and forth, is that he played professional baseball at the same time going to medical school.
Yeah.
And yes. Then later, as he was doing his, you know, postgraduate internships and training, he was going to school and doing this training and not going to the spring training,
yep,
which was a pretty important part of it. How was he able to function as a baseball player without getting warmed up and doing the spring training, which apparently is critical for a baseball player?
Throughout all his years, he was physically fit. He took very good care of himself. Long after his playing days, and he played in Chisholm until he was well over 40 years of age. But throughout his playing days and thereafter, he was very, very meticulous about his eating habits. He never carried extra weight, never drank alcohol, never smoked. So he was basically a sound person physically at all times in his life, except for the lung difficulty, and I won't digress now, but
That's what led him to Chisholm.
That's what led him to Chisholm.
Let's take a break and then come back and talk about his what led Doc Graham, Moonlight Graham, out of professional baseball, away from his family in North Carolina, and his brother Frank Graham to the furthest northern part of the lower 48 to spend his career. Brett Freelander and Robert Reising are the authors of the new biography of Doc Graham. It's called Chasing Moonlight, The True Story of the Field of Dreams, Doc Graham. All of us will be right back after this short break.
If you joined us late, we're re-airing a 2009 conversation with Brett Freelander and Bob Reising, authors of Chasing Moonlight, The True Story of Field of Dreams, Doc Graham. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. We're re-airing a 2009 conversation with Brett Freelander and Bob Reising, authors of Chasing Moonlight, The True Story of Field of Dreams, Doc Graham, and his one inning of Major League Baseball on June 29th, 1905.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, my guests are Brett Freelander and Robert Reising. They're the authors of Chasing Moonlight, The True Story of the Field of Dreams, Doc Graham. Doc Graham, those of you who are movie fans know exactly who he is, but you may not know that he's a very real person and very closely connected to Chapel Hill. His father went to school here. He went to school here. His brother, whom you may have heard of, Frank Porter Graham, also went to school here. And so the question for the authors is, how in the world did a son of the South, a son of Chapel Hill, not come back to North Carolina, and a well trained physician in a time when North Carolina needed physicians. Why didn't he come back to North Carolina, and why did he wind up in the coldest part of Minnesota?
Frigid.
Well, when Graham was playing out his final years as a ball player, he was in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and he became the most popular guy on the team because of his style of play and the fact that he was there for all 4 years. And he, at that time, had finished medical school, finished his internship, so he set up his first practice there in Scranton. And I think that he intended to stay there for a while because he liked it so much and had a connection with the people. But Scranton at the time was a coal mining city. And they had these big blast furnaces and smokestacks that were spewing this dirty smoke out into the air. And at some point, Graham developed some lung issues and had this persistent cough that would not go away. And that's what basically made him decide in 1909, I've played enough baseball. And he also decided that if I stay here, I'm not going to live a very long life. I've got to go somewhere where the air is cleaner. So anyway, he got a job as a resident at the Chicago Ear, Nose, and Throat Hospital. And he was there for about 6 months, and he went to a conference at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, still had the cough and couldn't get rid of it. And a colleague of his said, you should go up to the Iron Range, up near the Canadian border. The air is pristine up there. It'll clear those lungs right up. Well, while he was there, Graham heard that the Mesabi Clinic, which was run by one of the mines, one of the iron ore mines up there in Chisholm, needed a doctor. So he got on the train, went to Chisholm, and sight unseen, knocked on the door of the hospital and said, "Hi, I'm your doctor. I'm here."
And it worked out.
And it worked out.
And they needed him. They hired him. A lot of people, you know, the geography is really hard to see, but you just kind of go up almost to Canada and you find it. We've been hearing about another resident of nearby town lately, who writes and sings songs.
That'd be Mr. Zimmerman?
Might be the guy we don't call Zimmerman, but that was his name.
Yeah, okay, Bob Dylan, yeah.
So
yes.
Bob Dylan grew up in the same
Hibbing. Yep, which is about 5 miles up the road, yeah.
Roger Maris down the road, too.
Yeah. And Roger Maris. So this is a part of Minnesota that where other famous people were born, but not Doc Graham.
No, right, but not Doc Graham.
Baseball crazy part of the world.
And, you know, when he first got there in 1909, he got there on April 1st, 1909. The previous fall, they had a fire that destroyed the entire town, except for the three brick structures that were in town, the firehouse, the Catholic church, and the school building. And by the time he got there in April, the rebuilding effort was well underway, and, you know, there was smell of fresh-cut lumber and people milling around and scurrying around and the sound of hammers. And he really got caught up in that whole spirit of togetherness, that the whole community came together to rebuild. And that's one of the reasons why he stayed there. Because I don't think he went there with the intention of staying for the rest of his life. But he kind of got caught up in that and really kind of had an immediate connection with the people that were there.
So although he didn't come back to small town North Carolina, the small town aspects of North Carolina, which, I mean, he lived in the big town in Fayetteville, mm-hmm, and in Charlotte, the small town aspects that are attractive to many North Carolinians caught him up there in Minnesota. He
yes.
loved that life.
Yeah, and the people gravitated to him and he to the people, and he was not haughty. He was not arrogant. He enjoyed working with the miners and their children. He spent many a night with a sick child, introduced toothbrushes into the school system.
This is a very interesting thing. Although he was a physician, he found out that a lot of the health problems were due to bad dental health, and so he didn't wait for somebody else to attack that problem. He jumped on it.
Yeah. Yes.
In another respect, it's just like his brother Frank Porter Graham, seeing a need, and practically speaking, just rushing after helping people.
Absolutely. They were both very, you know, self-sacrificing guys. And that the whole family was like that. They lived their lives for others. What I find is really interesting, there's a lot of correlations between, you know, Doc's career and Frank's career, because Frank was a U.S. senator appointed to fill a spot and lost a special election less than a year later. His career in the Senate and Archie's career in the major leagues are very, very similar. And they were there long enough to say that they were there, and that's probably about it.
What a great parallel. That's so interesting.
Dr. Graham was very compassionate, had some habits, as it were, that revealed his compassion. One that I really enjoy is that he would correct collect checks from people renting from him, and he would forget to cash those checks.
So he became an investor there in terms of buying real estate, but he wasn't this hard, mean-spirited landlord.
No.
The other thing that that might intersect, he was Dr. Frank Porter Graham had the reputation of being a little bit absent-minded.
Yeah, and, and that comes from their father. There's a story we tell in the book right when Alexander Graham became the superintendent of schools in Fayetteville. He had disciplined a couple of boys who were acting up, and he put them in a little room and locked the door so they couldn't get out, and he forgot about them, went home, and then there was a major search for these kids. Where are they? And they never came home from school. And when word got to Alexander Graham, he's like, uh-oh. So, yeah, they get that. They came by that naturally.
It's interesting. Alexander Graham, the father of two – well, the father of nine children.
Nine children.
Which are,
yeah.
Two whom became very famous. One, our own Frank Porter Graham, the first president of the Consolidated University of North Carolina. And the other, Moonlight Graham. These guys were brothers. Alexander Graham, of course, was famous in his own right in Charlotte and is memorialized. My children went to Alexander Graham Junior High School.
Yes,
named,
that's correct.
Named
yes.
for the Graham. As you all point out in the book, something I didn't know, that these Grahams, the Archie Graham, Doc Graham, and Frank Porter Graham and their father, Alexander Graham, were at least maybe distant cousins of Billy Graham.
Yes, yes.
And the there was this strong intersection of Scots and Scotch-Irish and the Presbyterian faith. But Doc Graham, although he came from a Presbyterian heritage, he wasn't...
He wasn't a churchgoer. And, of course, he married a woman who was a Roman Catholic. He was... Never.
Which is no big deal today, but
it was,
among Presbyterians at the turn of the last century,
it was scandalous.
It was something that might have been one of the reasons he didn't come back home. Do you think is that a possibility? Or that she wouldn't come back home with him.
Well, it's a possibility, but they did come back every now and then to visit, especially Frank and he were very close. And Frank actually went to Minnesota several times and almost drowned one time when he was up there. He was taking a walk across a frozen lake and fell in, and some miners had to pull him out. And Archie's wife, Alicia, nursed him back to health. But they were pretty close. But, yeah, the parents didn't particularly care for Alicia, and that probably has something to do with the fact that he didn't go back to live to stay.
As you all point out, again, just a great book, this great book, Chasing Moonlight, The True Story of Field of Dreams, Doc Graham. The intersection that I've speculated about, having focused on Frank Graham, is that you mentioned that Alicia, Doc Graham's wife, nursed Frank Graham back to health. And what we remember about that is that he had gone up to graduate school and wore his eyes out.
That's correct,
In a New York City library.
That's right.
And so where could he go to get help? He trusted only
his brother,
one doctor,
yeah.
Doc Graham. And he went and was renewed physically by whatever treatments or course and so that he was able to get into the Marine Corps later on. I got a theory that Frank Graham at this point in his life was very much not only physically ill, but very much down in the dumps.
Mm-hmm.
And that there was a mental renewal that
Absolutely.
Was needed. And that if it hadn't – and so Doc Graham, we give him a lot of credit for all the things he did in Chisholm. But and we say, well, why didn't Chisholm – well, why didn't he come back here? Well, if it hadn't been for him – who knows what would have happened to Frank Graham and whether or not he would have been able to,
About that same time, their older brother David was killed in World War I. And so, and between that and his eyes failing him, he was at a crossroads. He was at a real crisis period in his life. And he went and he spent over a year with his brother and his brother's wife up there. And Alicia read to him because he wasn't allowed to strain his eyes. And the pace of his life kind of slowed down again. And he kind of got refocused. And then, of course, he ended up going into the Marines, and that was really good for him and kind of got him motivated again. And you're right. I think that turned his life around that period.
He came back a hard charger, so much so that he got the attention of everybody he worked with. And as a young person named president of the university.
He was renewed, too, I think, in part by seeing, not merely sensing, but seeing how Archie was so well received by the community, so much a part of the community, comfortable up there, comfortable with all kinds of people. It was nice to have a brother whom he loved, who was so well received in a community, so relaxed.
Well, guys, we need to take a break. We're talking about one of the Graham brothers, Moonlight Graham, Doc Graham, Archie Graham, who was Frank Porter Graham's brother. And we're talking with the authors of the new biography, Brett Freelander and Robert Reising, and we'll all be back after this short break.
If you joined us late, we're re-airing a 2009 conversation with Brett Freelander and Bob Reising, authors of Chasing Moonlight, The True Story, A Field of Dreams, Doc Graham. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. We're re-airing a 2009 conversation with Brett Freelander and Bob Reising, authors of Chasing Moonlight, The True Story, A Field of Dreams, Doc Graham, and his one inning of Major League Baseball on June 29th, 1905.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guests are Brett Freelander and Robert Reising. Brett Freelander, those of your sports fans, ACC sports fans, know him because he writes about sports. Bob Reising, people who've been in North Carolina knew him as a scholar and a contributor and teacher of many teachers at the University of North Carolina at Pembroke. Now you've left us temporarily, I hope.
No, I'm permanently situated at the University of the Cumberlands in Kentucky.
Well, we hope you'll come back. Well, we kept wishing that Doc Graham would come back. And we've talked about Doc Graham, who's one of the great heroes of the Field of Dreams, but is a real character. And you all have searched down in your book, Chasing Moonlight, some of the realities. Talk about his life as a physician up in this cold northern Minnesota town.
Well, I think basic to understanding him as a physician is that he was very well trained. He had had wonderful undergraduate experiences. He had a master's degree, and he had wonderful medical training and wonderful medical internships. So he was well grounded in medicine. And secondly, he had this great commitment to treating people. And he would stay with pregnant women, see them through their pregnancies. He would sit up all night with sick children.
He was one of the first in the country to practice what we now know as sports medicine, too, because he tagged along with all the football and basketball and baseball teams at Chisholm High School.
I loved the part of the book where you talked about that he was not only a practicing scientific physician, but he also knew something about the art of being a physician, and that he would, when an athlete might get a little injury, he would run out, take his bag, run it out, pull out a bottle of Mercurochrome and put it on the athlete, and didn't do any good.
Well,
except in the mental state of the.
Like many a good physician, he was also a psychologist.
Yeah, I loved that part of it.
And, you know, he had candy for the kids, and he had fruit for the kids, and he had coins for the kids. He was a very generous man, particularly around youngsters. And, of course, he and his wife had no children.
Yeah, you pointed out that he was apparently deeply in love with his wife.
Yes.
And or they with each other. And that it a great tragedy when they found out that they weren't going to have children, but that turned – and, of course, Frank Porter Graham had no children. Both of them – put that parental energy into a wider circle.
Exactly. Yeah, basically the children that of the Chisholm school system became Archie and Alicia's children, just as all the kids who came through all those years here in Chapel Hill became Frank's children.
It's a great story. I'd love to talk more about him as a physician, but another thing that intrigued me about your book is that you point out that Doc Graham did something that Frank Porter Graham was not able to do, and that is win an election. Although he lost a few, he was able to win one.
Finally. That's right.
Talk about the school board.
Well, when he retired from being the school doctor after 44 years, he was not the type that liked to sit around idly, and he was very antsy. And so Alicia told him, "You got to do something." So he decided, "Yeah, I'm going to run for school board." And he'd never been a politician, but he had become so beloved in town and had such a name for himself. He almost won against an incumbent the first time he ran in 1962. He ran for another open seat in 63 and ended up winning and became a member of the school board. But he was very, very non-confrontational. He would vote with the majority basically on every vote. And if he had an opinion and it looked like the other side was going to win, he would immediately change his opinion because he just didn't want to get into to an argument about anything.
Well, then was his service on the school board not constructive in any way, or what do you?
Well, you know, I don't necessarily think that he had a whole lot of major issues that he felt concerned about, but he would come to the meetings and he would give his two cents.
Yeah, sometimes these guys who are non-confrontational are good behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And working out.
And he was so strong academically and believed in a very strong academic preparation that, if nothing else, he was always a spokesperson for a solid academic preparation.
And I do know that one of the things, he thought that the school board members shouldn't get paid, that it should be a volunteer position, and that the money should go to teachers. And he did get them raises while he was the short time that he was on the school board.
Well, one of the things that we learned from your book is that a lot of people come to Chisholm searching for the grave of Doc Graham. And what do they find in Chisholm? What happens when they?
They don't find the grave in Chisholm. They must travel south to Rochester because he's buried in Rochester, Minnesota, next to his beloved wife.
Now, why did that happen? Why did it happen like that?
Well,
North Carolinians are not familiar with the geography of Minnesota, but Chisholm is in the far north.
4 hours north of Rochester.
Rochester is pretty far south.
Yeah.
Well, his wife was from Rochester, and she went to Chisholm to teach school. She was related to the school superintendent, who was a good friend of Archie's. Anyway, when Archie died, he was buried next to her, not in Chisholm, but in Rochester, Minnesota.
And in a Catholic cemetery, too.
In a Catholic cemetery.
Now, let's get this right. He's buried next to her?
Yes.
Well, now, I thought he died first.
Well, yeah, but plot. It was a family plot.
I don't mean to make a big deal out of it, but is one thing to go to be with your wife. It's another thing to be buried alone away from.
I didn't mean to suggest. Yeah. No, she lived.
She was a very strong-willed woman.
He's going to be there. And the other thing is that what about this apostate Protestant being buried in a Catholic cemetery? How did that work out?
She was a very strong-willed woman, and she was a very well-received woman.
Yeah. And, you know, you would think that at some point maybe a deathbed conversion or something, but Vita Pinikvar, who's the newspaper publisher that's played by Ann Seymour, swears to us that never happened.
Never
converted. And so we don't know, but I think it's because Alicia is a very strong-willed woman. She wanted it to happen, and she made it happen. You know what I think is really interesting? We visited the gravesite, and people still bring baseballs and coins and candy and leave it on his headstone, so that he'll always have something to give
somebody
to the children.
To the kids like he did. Well, guys, I could talk forever. Unfortunately, our time's up. Thanks for writing this great book, Chasing Moonlight. Our guest and authors of the new biography of Moonlight Graham are Brett Freelander and Robert Rising. Thanks so much for this great visit. Thanks to all y'all for listening. We'll be back same time tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this program from 2009 about Archibald Wright, Moonlight Graham, and his one inning of Major League Baseball on June 29th, 1905. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking. I'll be back here before you know it.